On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In 10 weeks and one day, Governor Evers will deliver a state budget address virtually. It normally kicks off budget negotiations, showcasing what the governor wants to prioritize spending on in the next two-year cycle. We explore what budgeting may look like in the midst of the health crisis, economic fallout, and a COVID vaccine rollout. In recent weeks, the governor has held budget listening sessions for Wisconsinites to offer input. One is set for tomorrow on criminal justice. A fourth and final one is set for next week on education. Have you been on one? What do you want to know about the state budget process? What would you like lawmakers and the governor to prioritize? It's 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross is editor of Wispolitics. He's covered state government and politics for decades. J.R., welcome back to the Ideas Network.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. So developing the biennial budget, this involves a nearly year-long process. In the fall of the even-numbered year, state agencies submit budget requests to the Department of Administration, and it seems we're smack dab in the middle of the process. Can you explain what numbers state agencies are working from in the pandemic?
Sure. They're working off projections, and honestly, the projections aren't that bad. But the caveat is the uncertainty over COVID-19. And so let me kind of give you a quick big picture look. The Department of Administration under Governor Tony Evers put out this report. They do every November of even-numbered years. And that report says that we're expected to finish this fiscal year, which ends June 30th, with a surplus of about $1.2 billion. If you add up the projected revenue for the next 2 years, that next budget period, and layer in then how much the agencies want to spend, we have a kind of a, we call it a shortfall of about $1.2 billion. The caveat, first big caveat is state agencies never get everything they ask for. It's like your kids at Christmas. You never get everything on their list unless you're going to spoil them. It's the same thing with agencies. They always overshoot what they really want because they know they're going to get pared back. At the same time, there are a number of like potential potholes in this road to having a budget being done. One of them is obviously COVID-19. We think we're going to get a vaccine that'll be widely available sometime in the next few months. We think the economy was going to pick back up from that. If that doesn't happen, that could be an issue. Number two, the budget from the Department of Health Services was built on the idea of accepting federal money to expand the Medicaid program through the Affordable Care Act. Remember, Governor Evers proposed that in his last budget. Republicans rejected it. If they don't do it, it adds another $588 million to that whole quote-unquote shortfall in these agency requests. So there are some issues to work with, not to mention a whole new lineup in the Joint Finance Committee, which is the budget committee legislature run by Republicans, and how that body will work with Governor Evers going forward.
Yeah, we'll look at the politics there in a moment. How much is Wisconsin banking on additional stimulus funds?
Well, right now we're not banking on anything because we've asked for them. Governor Evers sent a letter to the congressional delegation and the president last week saying, hey, we could really use about $466 million in money to help pay for the cost of contact tracing and testing and those kinds of things. That's up in the air. They're working on a bill right now in Congress. If that comes, that could take care of those costs. If it doesn't, there's another, pothole in this budget picture of how does Wisconsin pay for those things like contact tracing and the testing costs. If we have to do it on our own, it makes the hole a little bit deeper.
We're talking with J.R. Ross, editor of Wispolitics, and he covers Wisconsin government and politics, looking at the next two-year budget cycle, what it entails. What questions do you have about the state budget process? What would you like lawmakers to prioritize? Join in at 800-642-1234. J.R., the head of the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, Bob Lang, told members of the Assembly Ways and Means Committee last week that the way we do business has changed dramatically in the pandemic, how we shop, how we work, whether we pay the rent or not, he said. And I want to pick out the first thing he said, the way we shop. Of course, online retail sales are brisk with, consumers avoiding going into stores. What is the impact of this type of tax collection for Wisconsin?
So about a decade ago, Republicans been in control of both houses of legislature and the governor's office that saw the writing on the wall that at some point we would be able to collect sales tax from online sales involving out-of-state retailers. Back then, under kind of the national standard, unless you had a physical presence in your state, you couldn't tax those sales. Well, the Supreme Court decision opened the door to those collections, and before that happened, they wrote a law that said if we get more money from those sales tax collections on, again, out-of-state retailers, we want to use that money to drive down income taxes then. So on the one hand, if those sales are brisk, that's great. On the other, it basically is a net neutral because you take the additional revenue from those out of state, and again, I stress, it's out-of-state retailers, online sales, and you cut income taxes. So in this last budget, we saw, it's a few hundred bucks per family. If you spend a lot of money on online sales for out-of-state retailers, you probably come out even or maybe a little behind, but more or less, you get a little bit taken off your income tax bill because you're spending more on sales taxes.
Yeah. Let's take a call now. Ron is with us in Madison. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. Is it legally possible to freeze highway spending for those 24-month budget period, or to freeze 90% of that money if that's wiser? We cannot spend the highway fuel tax on anything else. Is it legal not to spend it at all and just to hold it in reserve to improve the state's credit rating, so we would pay lower interest rate on any money that the state government has to borrow? We can live without new highways for the next 5 years if we have to, while we stop the COVID pandemic and recover the rest of the economy. Is it legally
Yeah,
possible to
Ron,
just
thank
freeze it?
you. Yeah, JR, what about holding back on infrastructure and highway and roads repairs and development?
Well, first, I want to make sure you understand that we basically have two checking accounts in Wisconsin. All right. One, the one I've been talking about is the general fund that pays for healthcare costs, school costs, aid to local government. That's funded off your income taxes, corporate taxes, and sales taxes. What Ron's talking about is our transportation fund. It's a segregated fund built off of registration fees, gas taxes, and federal revenues. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I've never actually thought about freezing it or not spending that money. But I can tell you politically, that will never happen for a couple of reasons. One, the money that's coming in that goes back out, those pay for road projects that are good paying, family supporting jobs in Wisconsin. There is no way in a little bit uncertain economy that state government is going to say we're going to basically put the road building business out of business for 2 years, 5 years, whatever you want to say. I understand the idea of, maybe we have too many roads or whatnot, but the reality is that's not going to happen. Because it's like a stimulus project, and we're also watching the federal government to see what it's going to do because there's been talk about, under President Trump, and the joke has been infrastructure week for 4 solid years. About we're going to have this infrastructure week. We're going to have this big infrastructure project. It's going to be a big stimulus project. The entire country is going to come out and really help the economy. Well, now that we're moving to President Biden, maybe they get something done on that front. If that federal money comes, the state's definitely going to spend it.
WisPolitics editor J.R. Ross, our guide to the budget process, politics, how COVID could affect crafting the next 2 year budget. How do you want to see the legislature and the governor come together next year? What has your recent experience with state agencies been like? Are your expectations of government being met? Join in any of these points, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with J.R. Ross on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. What is certain, the pandemic will loom large in the 2021 to 2023 biennial budget. We're discussing how the process could unfold. Last week, we learned Republican Representative Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam was installed as co-chair of Joint Finance, the legislature's powerful budget writing committee. Bourne takes over after Representative John Nygren resigned from the legislature. Nygren served as JFC co-chair for four sessions. How do you want the legislature and the governor to work together? What does responsible budgeting mean to you? It's 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross is WIS Politics editor. He's our guide. Let's take another call now. Anne is joining us from Amory this morning. Hi, Anne.
Hi there. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just wondering what budget has been set aside for our prison system.
For state corrections, what do you see there, J.R.?
That is one of the five big drivers of state spending. It has been for a long time. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head. It is a very big number. Little caveat of good news that we reported last week was politics.com. In that regard, in terms of cost, the prison population actually has decreased for the first time in a while in Wisconsin. Now, it's not significant, but it's down somewhat through a combination of factors. That might ease some of those costs if that trend continues. But it is definitely one of the big drivers of our spending in Wisconsin, has been for years.
Anne, thank you for that question. JR, you know, in looking at the requests, running down the list, a couple things that stuck out to me, military affairs and district attorneys, two areas that are asking for more money in the biennial budget. What do you see there?
DAs are always asking for more money because they say they're perpetually understaffed, that they have issues with pay raises to keep good employees on board, that they need more positions. So that's a constant request. With military affairs, they have an infrastructure project they want to do. There's a radio project, if I remember correctly, that's driving that increase. So that's a big part of what they were looking for in the next 2 years.
Okay. Anything that stuck out to you among the requests?
A big one is the part of public instruction. It's requesting $1.6 billion in new general purpose revenue the next 2 year period. Now, obviously Governor Evers is a former state superintendent. That's one of his kind of, I don't say pet projects, but like his, you know, his favorite agencies, right? He really is a big believer in school spending. Even Governor Evers, people think, is not going to do $1.6 billion in new money for DPI because it just got a big increase the last two budgets. Carolyn Stanford Taylor, the outgoing state superintendent, made this request to, in her words, fully fund schools, get it back up to 2/3 funding commitment. If you remember, years and years ago, under then Governor Tommy Thompson, he went to this format, called a three-legged stool. You state picked up 2/3 of the cost of public education. They had the qualified economic offer that held down pay increases for teachers and revenue caps. And this is like how to control spending for schools, but also kind of keeping them increases. We went away from that model a long time ago under Governor Jim Doyle. We got away with the QEO. We also broke that commitment to 2/3 funding because we're in a difficult budget. This spending increase would go back to the state picking up those costs. That's people I talk to just don't think that is going to fly. Governor Evers undoubtedly asked for more money for schools, but $1.6 billion seems like an awful lot, people I talk to, in terms of a request from him.
What do you see out of the UW?
UW, that's an interesting picture because UW has borne the brunt of these costs, these cuts that Evers has ordered. So remember, part of the reason why we have this $1.2 billion surplus projected in this fiscal year is Governor Evers has ordered state agencies to, they call it a lapse. Basically, we gave you this money, you're going to have to cut some and give it back to us. For easiest way to explain it. The UW has borne a big chunk of that. So how are they going to be treated? Because they have the option of, you know, they have reserves. They can't jack up in-state tuition because there's still a cap on that. Mm-hmm. Out-of-state residents, they've been paying a lot more for tuition. They become a way to generate revenue for the UW, as well as grad programs and those kinds of things. So what I'm watching are, one, will the revenue limit stay, or the tuition cap stay in place? And talking to people for the last few budgets, even under Governor Walker, there was a sense that eventually at some point you have to lift those caps because you have to give the UW back the power to set its own tuition. But who's going to be the person to propose that? That's going to be the one thing, because it won't be very popular. So will they do that? And two, will UW get a big increase, or will it be held in check? You know, and if we do get a situation where things don't go well, do they get beat up a little bit? Now, Governor Evers, again, is a big education proponent. He's somebody who's advocated for UW, so I don't think he's going to beat them up in terms of what he does for his proposal. Because remember, these agency requests are not the final word. Evers now will take all these requests and mold them into his budget and flip to legislature. But if things go south, then what happens? Because UW has been, unfortunately for them, one of the places we go to find cuts when we have difficult financial times.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com. We're looking at what's ahead for Wisconsin's next budget cycle and what it could mean with you as well. And your questions, 800-642-1234. Debbie is joining us from Madison with a question. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Yes, I actually have two questions. But my first question is, what can you talk about the unfunded pension liabilities for Wisconsin and what the plan is to fund those again, how that would impact our budget? My second question is with regards to what the process would be for legalizing marijuana so that Wisconsin could use those sales revenues to assist with any budget shortfalls.
Debbie, thank you for those two questions. Go ahead, Jim.
First, legalizing marijuana, Governor Evers included a provision in the state budget last time to do that. It was taken out by lawmakers. Look, the budget is the one bill that has to pass. So it gets, so people sometimes load it up with other things. I don't know that he will propose that again, but he could. But also, they could pass a separate bill anytime they want to and take care of legalizing marijuana. Two, for the pension liabilities, actually for state employees, we are one of the few states in the country that doesn't have a pension liability, really. Our pension fund is fully funded. Now, there are entities that, like Milwaukee Public Teachers, that have some issues, if I remember correctly, that are out there. But for state, the state, we don't have it. And oh, by the way, while we were talking, I went and looked it up. The Department of Corrections, their budget for request for the next 2 years is $2.6 billion.
Okay, so let's look at our state's rainy day fund here for a moment. It's supposed to be used in times like these, recession or fiscal emergency. Mm-hmm. It's projected to reach about $760 million. Any sign how that fund would be used as part of a, you know, modeling for the next two-year budget?
I get the impression that lawmakers would be loath to tap that right now because, again, we don't have a severe problem. We have revenue growth the next 2 years. If you go back a decade, the very last budget that Governor Doyle did, we actually had a situation where revenues cratered because of the Great Recession, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that situation here. We have revenue. Revenues are going to go up. So we have an imbalance between what people want to spend and what we're expected to have in resources. What's more, the rainy day fund is actually going to go up if all these projections hold. We're going to get up to $775 million roughly when this budget ends. So there's a good, healthy chunk of change there. I just don't get the impression that lawmakers are willing to tap that unless we have a true deficit where we don't just have agency requests exceeding revenues. We have spending that exceeds revenues because the bottom falls out for some reason.
Let's look at Joint Finance Committee here for a moment. Representative John Nygren leaving, recently announced he's leaving the legislature. What effect might this have on the budget process?
Well, there's suddenly a kind of a lack of experience on that committee. Not only, you know, Nygren was going to be co-chair for a record fifth term for the assembly. Alberta Darling, a Republican from River Hills, she had been co-chair for record-tying six terms in the state Senate. She's no longer on the committee at all going forward. There are a couple of reasons for that. One of them was she supported somebody else for majority leader other than Devin Lemahieu, who became the leader for Republicans going forward. But Lemahieu's new team is really not that experienced compared to what we've been used to. So it's a new dynamic. Howard Markline from Spring Green is the new Senate co-chair. He's been on the committee before, but it's his first time as co-chair. How will he lead that team? You also have a Senate Republican caucus that overall is more conservative than it's been in the past, and the committee makeup kind of reflects that. So will this committee be more reluctant to agree with Governor Evers on things? Remember, 2 years ago, Governor Evers faced pressure to veto the entire budget Republicans sent back to him, but signed off on it for various reasons. This budget tees him up to go run for election 2022. Will he be more adamant that he has to have certain things or he'll veto it? Republicans work with him. And oh, by the way, in Wisconsin, it's not like the federal government where the feds shut down if you don't pass a budget. In Wisconsin, things continue as is at current spending levels if nothing new is passed. Now, every fall, there's pressure because of school aids, but there might not be as much pressure to finish a budget. There could be a political standoff going forward.
JR, thank you for joining us.
Anytime.
J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com, covering Wisconsin government and politics. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues as we discuss a proposed response to the pandemic from the Republican Assembly. What do you think of the items on Assembly Speaker Voss's 50-point plan? What should get traction? 800-642-1234. State Cap continues on the Ideas Network. We're looking at provisions put forth by Assembly Republicans last week to combat the spread of COVID and the economic fallout. It is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The written plan of dozens of proposals comes weeks after Governor Evers released his own pandemic-related legislation. Ahead of his plan, Voss discussed the pandemic response 8 days ago on Spectrum News' In Focus.
We need to make sure our economy remains open. So I do not support additional lockdowns or kind of more draconian measures like we're seeing in a few cities. Dane County has made it almost impossible to operate your business.
How do you want state lawmakers to address the COVID crisis? How have they done so far? It's 800-642-1234. Patrick Marley is a state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's covered state politics since 2004. Patrick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. So Assembly Speaker Voss releases a package last Tuesday saying it builds off of Governor Evers' most recent proposals, creates a roadmap for COVID going forward. Set us up with what's going on between the governor and the legislature.
Yeah, as throughout this pandemic, they're not really agreeing on much of anything. For a long time, Evers was saying he needed more money for COVID-19. The Republicans didn't want to meet. They were not liking his ideas, but not offering a counter proposal. So I suppose you have a positive development here in that Republicans from both houses have put forward different plans on what to do with COVID-19. But, the governor doesn't like them. The Republicans in the two houses don't like each other's plans. And so we remain at an impasse.
So do Assembly Republicans' ideas have any chance of advancing? Will the legislature convene this month?
I would say it looks very unlikely that they'll convene this month, but you never really know what's going to happen, especially when we have a federal money that's going to run out at the end of the year. And so then we're going to be in a very serious crunch with how to deal with testing, for instance. And so there's nothing like a financial crisis to make lawmakers who appear to be in, totally opposite corners to get together. So I suppose it's within the realm of possibility that something would happen here. But at the moment, they sure don't appear like they're going to in any way find a compromise or a way to address this that they can all come together on.
So Voss in a statement said Republicans were ready to take action this month on a bipartisan plan. What is happening in the state Senate?
So the state Senate wants to go a different route. They definitely don't want to meet. What they would rather do is have Evers put together a plan that's more modest than what he's proposed before of how to sort of get through the early stages of 2021, present that to the state's budget committee, which is 16 members of the legislature, and then have the committee sign off on that or modify it and approve it. Evers has not shown much interest in that so far, but again, that would be a way to get some kind of money in a stopgap way addressed. But the assembly wants to do this full-fledged, 50-point proposal that they have. So first you have to get the two houses of the legislature to agree on what to do. And then you have to get Evers involved in that. And so far there's just no one's agreeing on anything.
So as part of this 50-point sprawling proposal from the Assembly Republicans, one of the issues here is vaccine rollout and to give the legislature's Joint Finance Committee veto power over how vaccinations will be administered in Wisconsin. What do you see there?
So, yeah, one of the complaints of Republicans is that there are certain parts of the coronavirus response plan that the governor has full control of. They say they should have a voice in that. I mean, I would say a counterpoint to that is that the governor says that the Republicans in the legislature keep putting up roadblocks to things he wants to do. But the Republicans in the Assembly want to have a say in how any vaccine is distributed, you know, who gets it first, when they get it. And a very important point to them is whether it's a mandate that you have to take it. They want to prevent any kind of requirement that people take it, and they want to curb the power of local health officials to be able to order people to take it.
So running through Joint Finance, I mean, this is the state's most partisan legislative body. Could that ultimately lead to some serious gridlock amid a public health crisis?
Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I would say the Joint Finance Committee is a partisan entity, but it's as partisan as every other entity connected to the legislature.
Okay.
What it is incredibly powerful. So, yeah, you have the danger of gridlock there, but just like you do in any kind of relationship between a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature. I mean, if you're worried about gridlock, if people are worried about gridlock, that is what we have right now.
A part of this plan is basically requiring schools to get back in-person instruction by the end of January, requiring most state employees to return to their workplace. What do you see that VOS is trying to put in place for education?
So this is another part of the provision that is, sort of a red line for the governor and something that schools are just going to absolutely hate. And that is that if there are virtual classes that have been in place since September, if more than half of the school time has been virtual, the schools would have to refund parents money. So they'd have to pay $370 for each child in that school. You know, that's going to quickly add up to many millions of dollars in places like Milwaukee and Madison, which have had entirely virtual classes for the school year. And so, you know, it would be all but impossible for them to come up with that money. Or, you know, if they came up with that money, they would have to do, layoffs and all kinds of things that are not going to be very popular. So that's an issue that is going to be very hard to see how they could get the governor to go along with. But in general, the Republican plan would have us get back as much to normal life as quickly as possible. And so by the end of January, all schools would have to be back in session in class, in-person classes, with very few exceptions or very high bars for making that not happen. And all state workers would have to be, almost all, I think there's an exception for the UW, would have to be back at their job, unless they have a note from a doctor that doesn't allow them to be on the job.
We're talking with Patrick Marley, state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's breaking down COVID response proposal by Speaker Robin Voss and Assembly Republicans with your insights as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Chris, who's joining us from Port Wing this morning. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for this program. It seems that Mr. Voss, who's been AOL for months on this pandemic, absent without leave, decided to come back and throw his spaghetti at the wall to see what would stick. These ideas that you're going to limit the ability for local school districts to determine the best decisions that they can make for their school district. They're going to limit that, and they're going to force teachers back into the classroom regardless of the health situation is physical murder. It's suicide for the teachers if they go back. And what we've learned over time is that if we follow the logical health protocols, the cases go down. This is happening right now. Mr. Voss and the Supreme Court tied the hands of the governor as far as doing logical public health response. Now we're seeing him come in and try and force people to go into what physically will be a potential death threat. This is insane.
Okay, what, Chris, go ahead with your question.
Pardon me?
Yeah, do you have a question you would like to ask?
Yeah, we make comments too. But the question is, what does he think the viability of this 16-point plan is? It seemed like just the opposite of logical public health.
Okay, thanks so much for that. And what do you say, Patrick, here about any of these proposals going forward and specifically on education?
So, I mean, I would say that Voss would say he put this plan forward because he thinks all aspects of it are great. But it does have the appearance of also being a negotiating position, which we often see in legislative deliberations, that one side puts forward a plan that has some provisions they know the other side could never tolerate. The other side does a counterpoint with the equivalent and opposite points that they know the other party wouldn't like, and then they narrow it down. Now, we don't really have the two plans, I would not say, are in that same category, because there are there's just a lot more provisions in Voss's plan. But just because that's what he put forward initially doesn't mean that's what he would agree to vote on in the end. It looks a little more like you'd see in a budget negotiation than in a public health negotiation. But although Voss has defended all these aspects, he has not said this is a bottom line and he won't accept anything but this particular plan.
How would the assembly plan address the backlog in unemployment claims?
So it would essentially force the Department of Workforce Development, the agency that oversees unemployment, to get on top of that. It would leave some of the specifics to the department, but the department would have to present those to the Joint Finance Committee. The Joint Finance Committee could modify that and then keep its feet to the fire in even to the point where if the backlog wasn't fixed by certain points, they could reduce the pay of the Secretary of Workforce Development and other top officials in the agency.
Has there been any legs on this before? I mean, certainly the backlog has been going on for months. We've seen a huge expansion of the number of employees. What more can be done?
So, I mean, the backlog continues to persist. It's actually the most gains they seem to have made recently are because of a Google relationship they have that has helped them weed out some of the claims that are easier to fix and identify those so that they can move through those. As to how they're going to get the rest of them, I'm not familiar with their specific plans. They are more optimistic now. There has been a lot of frustration from Republicans in the legislature. There's been some frustration from Democrats in the legislature because this problem has persisted for a very long time. We haven't seen a legislative response so far to, anything put in action to bring that backlog down.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Patrick Marley is state politics reporter. We're discussing measures that Republican leaders have put forth in the pandemic. 800-642-1234. Still time to talk. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Patrick Marley, who covers state politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Assembly Speaker Voss put forth a $100 million plan last week to address the COVID crisis. It is the first detailed plan from Republicans in more than 7 months since the legislature last month. We're breaking it down with you. Patrick, let's look at businesses. The package extends liability protection for businesses. What does this mean in practice, and how does this relate to the crisis?
So this is something that Republicans, both at the state and national level, have been very interested in from early on. They're worried about, businesses trying to do what they can to protect customers and their employees, and then finding themselves that people get sick and that they get sued. And so they want to offer liability protection to businesses, to school districts, to local government agencies. So this is pretty broad liability protection that would be offered. This is something Democrats generally oppose pretty strongly. They say, look, if a meatpacking plant isn't putting in together enough protections and its workers or customers get sick, and somebody should be able to bring forward a lawsuit and have a judge decide whether they endanger those people unnecessarily.
Okay. And then so they Republican lawmakers had opposed stay-at-home orders. I mean, speaking of the courts, how does the assembly plan regulate local government's ability to issue COVID-19 restrictions or orders?
So that's one thing that we've had in this fight over COVID is that Republicans have said it should be left to local governments to decide things like stay-at-home orders and sort of how the best response would come at the local level as to whatever restrictions are put on people. And they fought the governor on that, on any sort of statewide orders. Now they want to also peel back the authority of the local governments. So for instance, they want to say that if a local government shuts businesses, they have to treat all businesses the same way. They would not be able to say bars have to close, you know, but gift shops can stay open. They would have to, if you're closing one type of business, you would have to close all type of businesses. And then I think I mentioned earlier that the local health officials who have very broad powers under state law would not be able to do things like mandate vaccines. So they want to curb the power of local officials to some extent here.
And so that, like you mentioned, is kind of going against the autonomy that local governments could have in order to react to COVID economic fallout and, the spread of the virus at the local level.
Yeah, they have previously said that they support letting, for instance, mask mandates being put in place by local versus the state government. Or, you know, business closures put in by the local government, but not the state government. And they have complained about some local orders. For instance, they have not liked what they've done in Dane County. Around mm-hmm. Thanksgiving time. They didn't like Racine's restrictions on school closures that affected not just public schools but private schools. So there has been some grousing about that. But in general, they have said we don't want the state to take action. We want to let that authority lie with the local government. Now, increasingly, they're showing resistance to the local governments having authority as well.
Speaking of masks, any indication in this plan about mask wearing?
No, I don't believe this plan has anything specific to mask wearing. Now, of course, the Republicans are on record in court saying that there should not be a mask mandate that the governor has put in place, that they believe the mask requirement that's stayed in place is something that they should have a say in, that they should get approval of that. And simultaneously, they've said they would not approve that. So they absolutely do not want a mask requirement.
Patrick Marley covers state politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's our guide to COVID-era politics and proposals going forward from Republicans in the Assembly. So, Patrick, when you look at this sprawling 50-point plan, how does this plan, what are the costs of it? How would it affect the state budget?
So it's more modern than the governor's plan. The governor's plan would be $541 million for the first part of 2021, which is a substantial sum of money. Voss's plan would put about $100 million toward COVID response. Much of that would go into increasing the number of contact tracers and other sort of frontline COVID response folks. But it would also force the Evers administration to cut back spending by about $300 million in other parts of the budget. So it actually improves the budget scene from a balance sheet standpoint, because you'd have this offsetting reduction that is three times as big as how much you're spending on COVID-19.
Okay, so going forward here, Governor Evers had met with State Senator Devin LeMahieu and Assembly Speaker Voss on November 20th. Are there any upcoming meetings scheduled, as you know?
So they talked a couple of times last week as well. When Voss put forward this plan, I guess he didn't present it to the other two, but he provided them this 23-page detailed summary of the plan. to let them absorb it. And then I'm not sure if they've met since then. They were making plans to meet. So if they have not met yet, they are meeting again soon, you know, to sort of see where they all are. But we haven't seen anyone, at least in their public pronouncements, open to the other sides, other than Devin Lemahieu from the Senate. He's the incoming majority leader. When I spoke to him, he said that he liked aspects of Voss's plans, hadn't studied much of it because there's a lot in it, and that he really felt like there was a danger of getting bogged down in all the details because of how expansive it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why he wants this simpler plan of just going forward to the budget committee and sort of having them deal with an initial measure right away.
Okay, I want to switch gears here to President Trump's campaign had filed two lawsuits in an effort to overturn election results in our state, and the state Supreme Court declined to hear the first lawsuit. What about the second one?
So the second lawsuit is before a federal judge in Milwaukee, and he held a hearing last week and expressed some pretty significant skepticism to what the president was asking. Called aspects of it really bizarre was a direct quote that he'd stated. And he'll have another hearing this week, I think on Thursday. And, you know, with the electors meeting in a little over a week, they meet a week from tomorrow. These cases really have to get resolved. In addition to the case that the state Supreme Court declined to take, right after that happened, the president filed a new lawsuit in state court, because what the Supreme Court said was, you shouldn't be starting with us. You can start in the lower courts if you want. So he filed a new lawsuit after that order, just hours later. That's gone to a judge, a reserve judge from Racine County, who heard it in an initial hearing on Friday. And he has scheduled a hearing for late this week. Again, that case is going to have to be on a fast track because the College of Electors meets so soon.
So, Patrick, as the year ends, what are you taking away from covering Wisconsin politics this year?
Well, I mean, what a year, right? Like, it was the year that lasted a decade. everything politically, you know, you go back to Act 10, you go back to past presidential elections, you know. Other than the Obama elections, we were like an incredibly close state. 2020 was, again, further proof of that. You know, Biden won by 21,000 votes, which is about the same margin Trump won by 4 years earlier. We're going to have a governor's race here in 2 years. You know, we're going to have a U.S. Senate race. Whether Ron Johnson runs again or not, we don't know what the shape of that race is going to be like. But we're going to be, you know, continue to be a divided state with very close elections and very strong passions on both sides.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Patrick Marley is a state politics reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's been covering Wisconsin state legislation and politics since 2004. Just ahead, pandemic fatigue is when worrying about the coronavirus and taking precautions becomes too overwhelming. We discuss how to recognize it and stay safe as COVID infections rise in the Midwest. Do you feel you have COVID fatigue? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.